Lecture 17, Stuart England.
With this lecture, we begin our treatment of the English Civil War, which was conventionally dated to 1642 to 1649, and the subsequent political conflicts and constitutional wranglings in England, culminating in the Glorious Revolution of 1688. I think it's interesting to note that these English political conflicts of the 17th century are often omitted from general treatments of the European wars of religion. This is probably in no small part due to a deeply ingrained tradition of English exceptionalism, the conviction of many English historians that their own history is unique and utterly unrelated to the more badly behaved things that go on the continent. But it seems to me that a better explanation for this tendency of treating the English Civil Wars as something separate is that these conflicts have traditionally been explained in terms of one of two grand, what we want to call grand narratives. That is to say, on the one hand, some people have argued that what the English Civil Wars represent is a kind of long-term march towards parliamentary sovereignty, constitutionally protected religious liberties, and religious freedom, what you might want to call the Whig vision of history, in which there's a kind of trans-historical push towards parliamentary sovereignty and all of these other good things. The other grand narrative in which the English Civil War has often been embedded is a Marxist vision of history, in which the Civil War represents the long-term rise of the bourgeoisie, a social group which seems to be rising in every era from the Middle Ages onto the 19th century, and in which we get a culmination not so much in liberal democracy, but in capitalism on the Marxist vision of history. I think it's worth noting at the outset that both of these visions of history, the Whig vision of history and the Marxist vision of history, actually have an awful lot in common with each other. In both cases, the war is seen as the product really of long-term causes rather than the outcome of particular short-term events. And indeed, in both of these narratives, the Whig and the Marxist narrative, we often get overtones of a kind of inevitability. The Civil War has to happen because, after all, we have to end up with some kind of government of civil liberties, or we have to end up with capitalism in some sense or another. Moreover, the similarities go a lot further than that. In both visions of history, the Civil War is carried out by a particular and identifiable group of people, whether lovers of liberty or the middle class, and this group has some kind of definite long-term goal in mind, freedom or capitalism or what have you. In other words, it's seen as a self-conscious process associated with a particular group, with a consciousness of its own self. Furthermore, in both visions of history, the rebels are seen as the progressives. They rise up against the restrictions of the crown, whether it's absolutism and intolerance or feudalism and economic backwardness. But in any case, the rebels are the progressives who rise up against an antiquated crown. And so the wars are seen as a kind of ideological conflict between, if you will, the forces of the future and the forces of the past. Now, I think it probably is worth stressing that all historians would agree that the English Civil War certainly had some kinds of social prerequisites, we might say. In fact, it's worth pointing out that whereas in the 16th century, when King Henry VIII of England would threaten or bully what you might want to call the political nation, the aristocracy, the gentry, people tended to be afraid of him. They tended to give him what he wanted. Whereas by the 17th century, a period by which the English gentry, itself a somewhat loosely defined group, but we can say the English landed aristocracy, had become a much richer, much more powerful group, and certainly a grouping less dependent on the crown than would be their counterparts in France, when Charles I tried to bully or intimidate this group, these people pushed back. So I think we can say there were some kinds of social prerequisites. But I think it's worth stressing, nonetheless, that most historians do now agree that all political systems are subject to strain and tension, and that there's no inexorable drift towards civil war in 17th century England. In fact, I think most scholars would now agree that the war was not even likely before the late 1630s at the earliest. There were, after all, recent research has revealed, no fundamental differences over religious and political principles between the sides in the conflict, although there were very serious tensions provoked by King Charles I's practices in particular and the practices of his closest advisors. Most historians, in other words, agree that the war was ultimately caused by specific problems in high politics, that is to say, a kind of crisis of confidence or a breakdown of trust and cooperation between the king on the one hand and the great men of the kingdom who actually wanted to be part of the process of government. Nevertheless, if